Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. SDPB introduces you to the candidates of the 2018 election. For the South Dakota Attorney General's race, SDPB has you covered. Tune in to SDPB TV at 8 p.m. Central, 7 Mountain for the Attorney General Candidate Forum, hosted by Stephanie Rissler. Then hear the rebroadcast on SDPB Radio. That's Friday, October 12th at 11 a.m. Central, 10 Mountain. That's right here on In the Moment. You can find our In the Moment conversation with Republican candidate Jason Roundsburg on our website, listen.sdpb.org. Today, we welcome Democratic candidate Randy Seiler to the Sioux Falls studio for an in-studio conversation. Hello, welcome, sir. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Lori. It's an honor and privilege and fun to be here.
All right. So how has the campaign been going? Because you get to go all across the state. What sorts of things are folks saying to you, when they meet you during campaign stops?
You know, the campaign has been good. It's energizing for me. I'm a native South Dakota and born in Mobridge, grew up in Harriet. And getting across South Dakota and talking to people in small towns and the larger communities has been a way to reconnect with my roots and my love for South Dakota. So the campaign is going very well. We're encouraged by the amount of support that we have across the aisle, so to speak, both independents, Republicans, and Democrats. The concerns that have been identified as I travel around South Dakota are obviously issues with respect to opioid and methamphetamine use and addiction. And what's the best way to address that? How in South Dakota can we, address issues that are tearing our families apart at some level with respect to methamphetamine addiction? And what's the best way to do that? How do you balance that with incarceration and treatment and recovery and those type of programs? You know, there's also issues with respect to, what I will call, generally speaking, public corruption. I mean, issues with respect to conflict of interest, with respect to professionalism, with respect to transparency and those kinds of things. And looking at it both from that side of it and also on the criminal side. And then, again, the other issues are keeping our children safe. How do you do that in terms of, the child maltreatment conference is going on the last couple of days here in Sioux Falls, addressing issues with respect to child abuse, child sexual abuse. We recently had a disclosure by a priest or an investigation in Rapid City. And then lastly, issues with respect to consumer protection. How do we protect our seniors from crooks and fraudsters? I mean, we've all received the car warranty calls, the Jamaican lottery calls. The Attorney General's office needs to be in the forefront of that effort also.
That's a huge amount of concerns when you walk around and people, and they're deeply, they're deeply personal. When people tell you the story, they most likely, I'm guessing, don't say, I'm really worried about this meth thing. They say, my son, my daughter, my husband, my wife, my employer, my employees. They tell you very deeply personal stories as well. It's not abstract.
It is, and it just tears you apart in terms of the impact on some families. After I retired from the U.S. Attorney's Office, I live in Fort Pierre. Hughes County was without a state's attorney, so the Hughes County commissioners and I agreed that I would fill in as an interim state's attorney for several months in Pierre. And I did that in a good neighbor fashion in terms of Pierre, Fort Pierre. But our first felony court day in Hughes County, we had 39 felony cases. 38 of them had a meth connection. And so that's how meth and opioids are driving our criminal justice system. They're permeating every aspect of the criminal justice system and tearing families apart.
How radical do we have to get to address the problem? How different does the solution look than what we're doing right now?
There's room for improvement. I think generally speaking, South Dakota is doing a lot of the same things that other states are. My opponent has proposed a meth prison with a mental health wing. I don't think that's the answer to opioid addiction or methamphetamine addiction. The research is clear. You can't address addiction with incarceration. It just doesn't work. We need to build on the programs that we currently have, the treatment programs that we currently have. And instead of putting huge money into building a new methamphetamine prison, let's put that money into treatment programs in the community where individuals can address their addiction, address their mental health issues while they're in the community with the support of their friends and family.
A lot of the lawmakers that have come in, folks who are running for State House, have said, you know, similar things. It's the treatment that we're really, you know, we're really lagging behind on in our communities. We need people to get help, and there aren't enough places for them to get that kind of help.
You're exactly right, Lori. I mean, it has to be a three-pronged approach. I mean, a three-legged stool, if you will. One certainly is enforcement and task forces and going after drug dealers and putting drug dealers in jail. That's important. Two, we need to expand our prevention efforts also. You know, there are programs in schools, but it's young adults who have graduated, who are out in the community, who are working, that have high incidences of opioid and methamphetamine use. So we have to have prevention programs that address more than just school children and more than just say no, as my opponent has proposed. And then third, I think the third leg of the three-legged stool, and where we can do the most, where we need the most improvement and can do the most good, our recovery and treatment programs. We need reentry programs when individuals get out of prison so that they can reenter the community with the support and the treatment that they need to stay out of trouble and stay clean.
You mentioned a recent case in Rapid City where a priest who was serving at a Catholic parish there was arrested. And you've said in other places that before this arrest happened, you were talking about this issue and seeking a general review of church records. Explain to me exactly, you know, what that means, what that looks like.
You know, I have a lot of experience in terms of my 22 years with the U.S. Attorney's Office, 14 years as a violent crime prosecutor, in which I've prosecuted these kinds of cases. And I know and understand and appreciate the difficulty in terms of disclosure and what's happened when children disclose and the difficulty associated with that and families and how to address that. And it's an incredibly difficult problem. Jolene's task force and the Child Maltreatment Center has identified that approximately there are 4,000 children every year in South Dakota that may be subject to sexual abuse or physical abuse. And my focus is keeping children safe. That should be the overriding consideration in South Dakota, and what's the best way that we do that? And if there are individuals in the community, in the schools, in the churches that have entered into confidentiality agreements that are still working in those locations because of the confidentiality agreement or because there has been cover-ups with respect to what's going on, I think that warrants an investigation. And I think the latest revelations in Rapid City warrant an investigation, using the grand jury to look at those. Certainly, we need to be sensitive to issues with respect to victims. And if those agreements have been entered into to protect victims, again, I want to make sure that their rights and their privacy and their opportunity to continue on some sort of path to recovery are protected. But at the same time, we need to ferret out and identify individuals that may continue to have access to children wherever they are in South Dakota and be aggressive with respect to their prosecution and holding them responsible.
Do you need a victim to come forward? Can you look at the situation overall without an individual case? I'm trying to figure out how it all, you know, is it possible for the Attorney General's Office of South Dakota to have an initiative and move forward without an individual person coming forward and say, we want you to look into this. You can do it because you set it as a priority.
Yes, is the short answer, that the Attorney General's Office can have an initiative, whether it's a cold case initiative, a child sexual abuse initiative, those kinds of things, and use the power of subpoena and the Division of Criminal Investigation to look at and obtain documents and records where there may be indications of child sexual abuse, and then to commence an investigation into those allegations. So it can be done without a victim in terms of an initiative, looking at whether individuals have previously made disclosures and that's been protected by confidentiality agreements. So you use the power of the grand jury, the power of the subpoena to obtain those confidentiality agreements. You keep them private, but at the same time, professional law enforcement and prosecutors are looking at those to see if there are individuals that continue to have access to children. And if there are, then you commence an investigation with respect to that. It's not a witch hunt. It's not going out there. The priority, obviously, is keeping children safe. And that should be something that we can all agree on.
And here's, on this show lately, it seems like we've been having these conversations about everything from rape and sexual assault to death and dying with people who are really, unafraid to talk about those topics. And child sexual abuse and child abuse seems to be one of those topics that a lot of people don't want to talk about because we just like to pretend that it's not, it's not happening. It's very rare. It only happens every once in a while. But the numbers don't say that. Is it time to just start talking about it in order to do something about it as well?
You know, I agree. It is time to start talking about it. You know, where we need to talk about it and how we need to address it is in open court, in the transparency of courtrooms, by holding individuals who have engaged in this kind of conduct responsible. And, you know, it is time for a conversation. When I was U.S. attorney, we partnered with Avera and held a child sexual abuse conference in which we brought in Jerry Sandusky's foster son and others to talk about identification and prevention and disclosure and, you know, working toward the goal of, one, keeping children safe, but also trying to eliminate child sexual abuse in our lifetime, to break the cycle in terms of, you know, generational aspects of child sexual abuse because of a variety of reasons.
You have said in the past that it's about more than knowing the law. Tell me what that means for you, because this ties into the experience that you have.
You know, I've said, you know, lawyers need to know the law, and law students need to know the law, but it's not enough to just know the law. You have to practice the law. You know, when you walk into the courtroom holding the hand of a 5-year-old or a 7-year-old child victim, and she's looking at you with some expectation that things are going to be okay, it's not just enough to know the law. You have to know what to do, how to practice it, what witnesses you need to call, how to try a case. You know, we've all heard the old adage about, well, it's hearsay, you can't use it in the courtroom. There are 23 exceptions to the hearsay rule, and so those are the kinds of things, to work with experts to make sure that children can tell their story under the most sensitive and appropriate conditions while defendants' due process rights are being protected. You can't learn to practice law, Lori, when you're the Attorney General. So I bring that wealth of experience to the Attorney General's office. I've had that experience. I've been a prosecutor for 22 years. I've been on the school board. I've been on the Fort Pierce City Council. I've worked with federal law enforcement, with state law enforcement, with tribal law enforcement. I'm still under contract with Hughes County to follow up on some issues with respect to their civil matters. I'm working with the Lower Brule and the Crow Creek Sioux tribes to address issues with their court system and their prosecution. So it's that kind of breadth of experience. I've tried over 70 jury trials, been lead counsel on 500 or 600 cases throughout the course of my career as a prosecutor. But the beauty of it is that I also did 14 years as a defense attorney, so I've been on the other side of this. I know both sides of it. I've tried cases as defense counsel, homicide cases, arson cases, as a defense counsel. And as part of that experience, you know, I also bring professional and executive management abilities and experience to the office from my time as U.S. attorney running that office. There are approximately 60 employees of the best lawyers and best legal professionals in the state working there, working with the Division of Law Enforcement Assistance as the Hughes County State's Attorney. So that's the background that I bring. I know how to practice law, and I'll be able to hit the ground running on the first day right after I'm sworn in.
Let's talk a little bit about the intersection between politics and law, because as U.S. attorney, that's a natural step. That's where South Dakota State Attorney Marty Jackley came from, U.S. attorney to South Dakota State Attorney General. Make the connection for people as why that transition you feel makes sense, and then we'll talk about, you know, what happens after the Attorney General's office.
Well, I've said on the campaign trail that the Republicans got it right, and in a little bit in a kidding and joking sense, because when the U.S. attorney the U.S. Attorney's Office had Marty Jackley as their U.S. attorney under a previous president, and the Attorney General's office became vacant when Larry Long became a judge, they did a statewide search and selection process for the best qualified person to be Attorney General. And they selected Marty Jackley at that point, who was then the existing U.S. attorney. And I think there was a reason for that. Marty brought a wealth of experience and background in private practice, but he also had been U.S. attorney for 3 years and doing comparable kinds of things that the attorney general does. And that's the same experience that I have in terms of 22 years with the office. There are comparable responsibilities with respect to making decisions about prosecution, about search warrants, about investigations, about the defense of either the state of South Dakota or the United States with respect to civil actions. So when the government, when the United States government got sued, you know, the U.S. Attorney's Office defended those cases. When the state of South Dakota gets sued, the Attorney General's office is involved in defending those matters. So I've been there. I've sat at counsel table in those kinds of cases with victims, with others, with individuals who have been involved in litigation, as Marty did as U.S. attorney. So I think it is the best training ground, if you will, to be Attorney General.
And then we all know Marty Jackley went on to run for governor of South Dakota. So the Attorney General's office can also be seen as a political stepping stone. What are your thoughts on that for your career? How are you personally approaching that office?
Well, we've joked a little bit, and Marty's a good friend of mine, that over the years, AG has stood for aspiring governor. And, you know, but that's not who I am, and that's not why I'm running for office. That I have said repeatedly out on the campaign trail that I will never run for higher office, that I intend to just run for attorney general. I don't want to use it as a stepping stone for higher office. I promise not to play politics with the rule of law. I want to take that off of the table at the beginning of my time as attorney general. I want to represent the people of South Dakota in the best way that I can, without any aspects or without any conflict or without any issues in terms of having to make political decisions along the way. So I'm not going to use it as a stepping stone, and I think that ensures that the rule of law can be followed faithfully and honestly, that I won't play politics with the rule of law. I've spent my entire professional career, in a sense, making decisions that are not based on politics, that are not based on my personal beliefs, but on a good faith approach to following the law, looking at the evidence in the case, whether it's criminal or civil, and making decisions appropriately and accordingly.
Talk for a moment, if you will, to the law enforcement officers in this state. What does it look like to be a cop in South Dakota under Attorney General Randy Siler's administration?
You know, I've been with the U.S. Attorney's Office for 22 years. I've worked across all jurisdictionals with respect to law enforcement at the federal level with the FBI, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the Drug Enforcement, ATF, the Marshals Service. As state's attorney, I've worked with the Pierre Police Department, the Hughes County Sheriff's Office. I've worked with tribal law enforcement. I've worked with the Bureau of Indian Affairs. You know, I've supported law enforcement, and I respect law enforcement in terms of the difficult job that they have to do every day in South Dakota to keep all of us safe. So what I bring to the Attorney General's office as far as the law enforcement perspective is an understanding and a support for them that's been demonstrated over the course of my career. I've been there. I've had their back. I've made the tough decisions with them in the middle of the night when they've called about issues with respect to law enforcement. I've appeared before magistrates and obtained search warrants. I've walked into courtrooms with them and been involved with them and their testimony and those kinds of issues. So, you know, I'd ask that they look at my track record with respect to supporting law enforcement. You know, law enforcement is very diverse across South Dakota also. We have federal, we have state, we have tribal. You know, we've brought them together in terms of task forces to address issues like violent crime, to address issues like drug dealers and those kinds of things. So I bring a profound respect and admiration and support for law enforcement, but it's not without conditions. They have an obligation to the public to also treat the public with dignity and to respect and to follow the law as law enforcement officers. So it is a two-edged sword with respect to going forward.
You only have about a minute left, and I'm glad that we do, because as a mother, this is a question I was hoping I would have time to ask you, and that's about school safety. What do you think in your office can be done to sort of continue that conversation about making our kids safe when they go to school?
You know, it tears my heart out that children would have to worry about their safety when they go to school. You know, and in a nutshell, the legislature has addressed this with the school sentinel program to some extent. I don't think that's the exclusive answer. You know, what works in Harding County may not work at Roosevelt. So if Harding County, their school board, their parents, their school administrators, their children want to arm their teachers, I think that's a local decision. I think that's a good thing. That may not work for Roosevelt or Lincoln or some of the bigger schools. So it needs to be a local decision about how to do that. And I pledge the support of the Attorney General's office in ensuring that we keep all South Dakota children safe.